Hello and welcome to Teaching Here and There, the podcast about hybrid teaching in higher education. And you are listening today to the TealFest episode, a special episode that relates to the University of Warwick's TealFest event that was held earlier this year. I'm Dom Pates.
And I'm Ivan Sikora.
And I'm James Rutherford.
And we have with us today some of the organisers from the TealFest event. We have Jessica Humphreys and we have Dr. Robert O'Toole, or as he tells us, Dr. Bob to his students. Jess and Robert, I'd like you to introduce yourselves. If you could tell us a little bit about your role, your background, what you do at Warwick, and then we'll head into the main questions. Jess, can we go ladies first today?
Okay, thank you. So I'm Jess. I work as assistant professor at the University of Warwick in academic development, and I lead on the Technology Enhanced Active Learning Festival, the TealFest, that we launched 2 years ago in the middle, right at the start of the first lockdown in the UK. And we've had now three runs at it. My areas of interest, I lead on the Technology Enhanced Learning Provision for Staff Development and also the Learning Design Consultancy Unit. So working mainly with staff, but also having the opportunity to involve student voice in some of what we do at Warwick as well. That's me.
Welcome.
Right, so me. Okay, Robert O'Toole. I'm what's called a Director of Student Experience and Progression for the Faculty of Arts and Humanities at Warwick. It's a bit of a kind of not very meaningful title. What I do is in charge of developing the use of technology and the teaching and learning experience for the faculty. So, which is largely kind of trying to influence the direction of travel and to get people interested as well. So I'm also do design research and teach design thinking undergraduate and postgraduate, which is really exciting, fascinating stuff. And I guess I'm kind of probably one of the kind of leading innovators in teaching practice in the university. I have been involved in technology enhanced learning since around 1998 at Oxford University and then Warwick University. So I've done all kinds of stuff. I'm particularly interested in the design of physical and digital spaces and how we integrate them to make a kind of free-flowing, agile kind of experience where the students themselves have quite a lot of design agency over what happens.
Great. Thank you very much, both of you. It's great to have you with us. Just as a reminder for myself and for listeners, TealFest, just remind us what that means again, Jess.
It's TealFest. It's Technology Enhanced Active Learning. So it's the idea behind it originally was an opportunity to share amongst ourselves at Warwick the great work going on around technology enhanced learning. But having conversations with Robert, we wanted it to be a bit more active. And so we claimed the TealFest idea. Teal originates from MIT, I think, use it. So it already exists, but we've adopted it.
We thought we dreamed it up. So we were looking for a term for technology enhanced learning that got away from the kind of idea of transmission of content and very passive role for students. So technology enhanced active learning, nice acronym. Fantastic. And we were all really excited about this and thought, yeah, Warwick, Teal, that's our thing. And then we looked online and found that MIT had already got it. That bastards.
good ideas are always out there for the taking. I'm a magpie for tell ideas, I find, as well.
So just picking up again on the TealFest, both to a question to both of you. Why have you chosen this event format?
Right, well, originally, TealFest was going to be a fringe event for an education conference. So we were going to bring people together in real life. It was going to be a Warwick-based thing. And we were going to share our experiences of technology and how we are active with the use of it and how it helps with the experience of the students. But then COVID happened a couple of months before we were due to go live, and it was getting, it sort of went to the back of our minds. We were, did an emergency pivot, as everyone did, and in our roles, Rob at the time, academic technology, I'm academic development at that time, we had to provide emergency material to help support people and get them through. So that wasn't a priority until 2 weeks before our planned festival. It was suggested that actually now was more important than ever to get people together to talk about TEAL and to hear what had happened in that traumatic first 8 weeks of lockdown. So we did an online conference. We had invited colleagues to come together, and within 2 weeks we turned around from no experience of online conferencing, a staff conference at Warwick where we were sharing ideas. It was a really nice, supportive, open space for people to say what the experiences they were having, and we invited everyone along to that. But it's evolved, so we didn't want to stop it just there. So the second iteration, we thought, we'll open it up to the world because we want to hear beyond Warwick, we want to develop our understanding, and it's great hearing from each other, but now let's get a different perspective. And then this year again, we wanted to open up even more and to make it as open as possible. So this year all of our resources are openly available following the conference, but it's just a great opportunity to get, particularly get staff and students into the space to hear what their experiences have been around TEAL. Obviously it's reflecting on COVID and the pandemic, and but yeah, there's lots going on in that space.
So Robert, just coming to you,
so the original conference idea was going to be exploring how to make the most of some of the very interesting physical teaching spaces we have on campus, and then we had to do this rapid flip. But actually, I think that we were really, really confident about that. And one of the things that we were trying to show through changing formats was how easy it was for us just to flip the formats and go online. Now, we had spent, so a very small group of us, including Jess and others, had spent a couple of years getting really familiar with Microsoft Teams, the technologies and the techniques. So probably the techniques are more important than the technologies. Mm. So we're really, really familiar with that. I've been using it in teaching for 2 years already. So, you know, just entirely happy. And actually, we were just showing that, you know, this isn't hard. Actually, we can do this. Now, importantly, for Warwick University, which is very research intensive and people are very focused on research, a bit less so now. So the teaching is, you know, that's really come to balance out research. Doing this as a research activity and getting Warwick academics who are very research focused to say, okay, this works for research and it's going to work for teaching. Mm-hmm. And that was a good way of selling it.
Quite a bold move to actually say, do you know what? We could do this online. It's big and it's going to involve a lot of doing things differently. I remember a lot of reticence, even though there was a lot of, everybody had to jump online back in the first lockdown, but actually going, we're going to run a conference and we're going to do it online and it's going to work and it's going to be great. And it's going to be focused around the important things like active learning in this space. That's fantastic.
I think we have to also give a lot of credit to our colleagues, the academics that came along at such short notice and were able to have the confidence to take a risk. Along with us to in this conference space and to share what they were doing, what worked and what didn't work.
I joined one of Robert's workshops on an iPad on the Miro app at some point, I think, 2021 maybe, but it was a great session.
That was the first time I'd used Miro live with a large group. Yeah, we were confident. We were kind of cool with that and okay with failure as well, okay with things going wrong. But we had done not just the small group preparing and learning how to use Teams or do online teaching and very effectively, but actually we'd had a kind of probably a 10-year campaign to shift the attitudes called the extended classroom. So we get people primed to the point where, you know, really good leading academics were kind of happy with the idea of just engaging in a different way.
That's brilliant. So let's dive into the substance of our discussion today. It's fascinating to have that opening.
So basically, teaching here and there is all about hybrid teaching. And it's always interesting to hear different perspectives about delivering and supporting synchronous hybrid teaching. I'd just be very keen to hear one key part of that that's resonated with you. Maybe go to you first, Jess.
Hybrid teaching has been something that sometimes I really struggle with. We deliberately run Tealfest online just for simplicity, but Rob did a day of being in a physical space, so there was an element of hybrid there. But we, because of the nature of hybrids and the technology that we have available to us, again, it's another risk, and we haven't always got the room set out in a way that would help to facilitate a really truly hybrid experience. We did have a theme this year at Tealfest that focused specifically on hybrid, and we had some submissions for that, including a colleague from the University of Manchester talking about hybrid assessment and her experiences of that approach, which was fascinating. I'm still grappling with it. The idea that I don't want transmission pedagogy. I don't want to just stand there and talk at my students and they take it in wherever they are in the world. And that's that. I want interaction, and that element of how we create that collaboration, that interaction, it's a real challenge. And I don't think technology is quite there yet for us. I know in my experiences of delivering hybrid and being a participant, with delivery, it's a stress. And I'm fortunate I've got some amazing people who are with me in that experience, or I'm supporting them. So there's more of us in that room. But also the idea that we, when I'm a participant, actually I get a lot more being online because I can sort of hear everything and enjoy and engage with it. Where I'm in the classroom, sometimes you don't quite, especially with masks, especially when we were doing the social distancing. Maybe things have changed, maybe things have evolved. But I have quite a, I'm still in a bit of a juxtaposition with hybrid, and I do see the value. I mean, way before the pandemic, I sat in one of Rob's classes and he had some experts in the session who weren't there physically. And that was just brilliant to be able to bring people in from across the world. So it's an area that I'm really interested in, and I really want to help support people. And we are talking more in our design conversations with colleagues around how we design, but it's the why hybrid, why not be online, why not in person?
And when we talk about hybrid, just for context, we talk about live synchronous teaching, as opposed to some people think hybrid is blended learning, for example. Robert, over to you for your, what would you say is a key aspect of your personal experience in delivering and supporting this?
So my official position on this, my official advice for the faculty, bearing in mind that we have very little technical support in the faculty, in fact, almost none. Okay, so really? The faculty has almost no technical support. Other than the centrally provided support, which obviously is overstretched, and you know, sometimes you can get people to come and help you, sometimes you can't. You definitely can't bank on people being there to help you in a live session. So my official advice has been to avoid rushing into hybrid teaching. So the idea that we can run a traditional arts humanities teaching activity and have students in the class and outside the class without extra support and without extra technology. We don't have much extra technology and very few rooms kitted out for this. I said, just avoid it. Don't think that you're going to be able to do this easily. There was a phase where people were kind of expecting it to be an easy thing to do. However, then I go on to talk about, okay, but actually this is an opportunity to rethink teaching and learning and the student experience and the kinds of things that students are doing and the ways in which they're working. And so it's kind of easy for me teaching design research, design theory, design thinking, because in design professions, people have been working in hybrid ways forever, you know, since the invention of the internet, and they're really good at it. So Miro is a kind of, you know, a classic example, because so we have a Miro board, that's a single mirror board that we're working on throughout an entire course, module, 10-week course, okay, and beyond, and students are doing their assessed work on there as well. And so we've got this surface which we can zoom in on and do activities around, and it's kind of meaningful and interactive, and you can work on those activities together wherever you are, in the room that we've got with a big touchscreen, giant touchscreen, which is really cool, online or wherever. So focusing on that as our kind of medium for collaboration, whether in class or online, that works brilliantly. And then it kind of, you know, we start to think about different ways of organizing the events. And when I teach one of the postgraduate courses, humanitarian engineering, design thinking for social impact, we teach that in a week. And we'll start off with every morning a kind of huddle kind of thing. So we call it a reflective jam. We're all getting together online. Sometimes we'll do it in physical space and we're kind of flexible about that. Or sometimes we'll combine the both. And, you know, it's a very kind of intensive sharing ideas and dialogical kind of thing and showing things.
And is that in hybrid style sometimes?
Whatever. Meets the needs.
Right. Okay.
Totally flexible. And then we'll spend
some photos of that.
Time going off and kind of breaking out and doing project work on Miro boards in small groups. And, you know, and then you might have times where students are kind of working more independently, but they're still in touch. Okay. So they're still kind of present and communicating through Teams chat and doing things together and sort of focusing on their own stuff and then focusing on team stuff, and it's very flexible. That's how people work in the real world, and we are most importantly trying to create a real world authentic experience for them. And most importantly for us, what we want the students to develop is the ability to think, okay, so this afternoon we need to achieve this, and this is the best way of working, and to have a repertoire of techniques to choose, some of which might be hybrid, digital, online, face-to-face or whatever, and choosing the best way of working, to be actively thinking about what the best way of working is, and then enabling them to do that. That's really key.
Thank you. Yvonne, you're bursting with a question here, I know.
I'm listening to Rob and Jessica, and I'm trying to figure out, having in mind that Rob has been in this game from 98, as he said in the introduction, and Jessica is actually actively involved for past few years, and having the position that is formal really related to this. Has there been any themes that emerged in the team that you haven't seen before, maybe in a different type of activities, or maybe the branch of science that you haven't seen before, and how that influenced in a way your way of thinking about the hybrid, regardless or despite your experience, your vast experience in the field itself?
And just to add to that, thinking specifically about the Teal Fest event itself.
Yeah. So maybe Jess, you can start, and then Rob can add up to this.
So the themes in the Teal Fest, I think the thing that came out, some of it was stuff we're familiar with. We had a lot of student voice in there, and there is a division with everything on views and viewpoints and what is the benefits of hybrid and their experiences of hybrid. And I guess There are some that feel that the flexibility and the choice it affords is brilliant, that they don't have to go to the lecture and sit in there at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning. But others that I think, as we move further away from, you know, now we know what we miss. We know the social learning, the actual being together, connecting. So that those were sort of themes that came out. There is as well, I think there was a lot of things that weren't said because people are still experimenting, that there is some unsureness about hybrid, that we aren't actively encouraging it as an institution because we can't fully support it in the ways that Rob described as well. The theme that sort of came out, which I hadn't thought about particularly before, was the theme that Patricia Pullman D rose, which was how hybrid can be used in assessment. And that wasn't something I personally had considered. I'd always considered it from the being in the classroom and delivering sessions, and how do we get everyone to interact in different spaces? And it was really interesting to hear her experiences of the creating authentic assessment. Mm-hmm. And Rob's right, it's about how we rethink teaching and what we're trying to do, and this opportunity to diversify what we're doing, and thinking about the world in which our graduates are going to enter. It's changed. I mean, here I am at home, and it's a smaller world talking to you guys. It's a of very course. So how do we give them experiences and ensure that they are ready for that mad world that they'll be entering? So I think it's opened up questions. It hasn't necessarily answered. And one of the things I enjoyed most that week was one of the sessions that Robert was involved with, where we had someone come over from a company to do some creative stuff, breaking the rectangle, thinking about things in different ways. And Rob can talk more about this, but based in Fab building, the Faculty of Arts building, we were all at home watching, seeing him jump up and down and do things. But people were invited to come along, but they didn't. And it was a real shame. But
put their cameras on. What a crazy waste of an opportunity. So that's actually...
Who didn't put the camera? The presenter or the other people?
Participants.
Uh-huh. We had yeah.
But there's a key word there, isn't there? Opportunity that you're talking about, Jess, with this. And Robert, you wanted to come in on that point.
So here's an interesting theme. So, obviously we should be wary of making observations about generational differences.
Of course.
But when I said that particular breaking the rectangle, so the rectangle is this, the thing that we're trapped in now, and we should be breaking out of it. And there are ways of doing that now. So I have, we always get a physical theatre group called Highly Sprung Performance. They are amazing. They work with young people, old people, everybody, to get them kind of thinking about space and movement and risk and physicality. Mm-hmm. We have that as a on-campus workshop in the design thinking undergraduate module every year, and it's amazing, has a great impact. And when we had to do it online, again, because of the way in which they think, the way in which they do this kind of design thinking, looking at what's possible and trying to break out of the constraints, Highly Sprung adapted it to work online brilliantly. And our students just did it. They kind of got into it and it just worked. So all the students have got their cameras on. We've got maybe 25 students on the screen. They're doing stuff, and doing attractive stuff and doing things like, we see everybody trapped like this.
Of course.
And you just say, just move back from the screen and use your body language.
Yeah.
So when we tried to do that with staff members and people who have probably grown up with kind of simplistic video conferencing and struggled all the way through those years, they find it very hard to break the rectangle. In fact, they're really struggling because, they've got quite constrained habits. Habit is very strong. And they're not kind of like seeing. So I'm standing back from Teams now and looking at all this and the features and the arrangements. And I'm thinking, OK, so how can I break this? This is our habit, but we don't have to do that. Now, I found that our design thinking is obviously they're design thinking students, so they're more like that. But actually, the younger people that I work with are less stuck in the habits and the expectations of how video conferencing works. Actually, it's easier for them to break out of that if we let them.
So this is an absolutely fascinating theme. I wish that we had twice as long today for our recording, because I'm sure there's so much we could go deep into.
Especially here having Rob from the design side, I think this is this is the trick, because we're always thinking in these, I think, stiff rectangles.
So let me take you back to Jess's example there as well. And for our listeners, the session, the TILFEST session that Jess is referring to, a colleague was giving a case study example from an MBA module of three groups of students, one of whom were presenting in the room in a socially distanced way, one of whom were presenting in a hybrid way, and the third one who were presenting fully online. And she was presenting her sort of reflections on that experience, which is fascinating. Jess, I wonder if there's anything else that you'd like to add, or Rob as well, about your perspectives on hybrid for assessments, which is quite a challenging way of thing to think about.
Again, I think it's quite brave, and it's thinking about it from the design perspective. And it is very, I think, when we're doing that sort of thing, the communication's key, how we communicate to students, what our assessment criteria is, so that we make sure that I find it quite challenging to think how they have a parity of experience and opportunities in that space with those choices. And bearing in mind that particular example was within the hardcore days of the pandemic, when well, not that hard, but as in we all had masks in the room and we couldn't see each other. So I had another colleague at work do a similar project. It wasn't on assessment, but it was on comparing the three, and it was similar outcomes around the fact that people preferred, that they had choice and people preferred the online element because they knew where they were, they felt secure, and at that point in time, face-to-face was a challenge. But yeah, with assessment, I think it's a really good opportunity to go back to something we discussed earlier about diversifying, to think about what we're trying to do in our assessment and what skills we really want our students to come away with. And in that complete context, it was really authentic that she was getting them to experiment with, you know, creating pitches in a business world where you would be having hybrid meetings, you would be meeting colleagues who are around the world, and you would be presenting that feedback back in the way that was. The biggest issue that I would find with that, and that was said, was around, again, the technology and having a situation, a room where you aren't just seeing one screen, you can see multiple, or you can hear people, you can engage with people. And I think it is the key element here is, what is it you are assessing? Going back to that point, really thinking about that criteria. And I'm excited, I'm really interested to find out more. It's not something I've dabbled in. I'm sure Rob has, though, or has more to say. So
I absolutely agree with what you're saying there. Now, if you think about how authentic to the real world, how useful is the skill of sitting in an exam room in silence at a desk for 7 minutes and scribbling on a piece of paper.
And they're having a
nobody is ever going to do anything like that in the real world. Whereas we've got students, every university's got students graduating who are absolutely totally terrified, don't know where to start with working in a hybrid way with a team that's distributed around the world, and yet that's going to be the norm. So we are doing something, we're doing a disservice to the students by not developing that capability and having that as kind of a focus for assessment, at least in part. You know, I'm not saying it replaces everything, but our students are going to struggle if they can't do that.
That chimes with conversations I've had on our MBA programs at City with colleagues that do exactly that. They're trying to prepare students for the world that they're going to be going into as well.
Yeah, and
interestingly, we've just done some market research. This is market research on current applicants for Russell Group Arts and Humanities subjects. We're proposing a new degree program, so, and that degree program is going to use these kinds of what seem to be radical methods, authentic learning and assessment. And the response from the students has been absolutely amazing. So in the feedback, in that market research, the students are telling us that's what they're looking for. They do not want to be doing exams and essays.
Interesting.
And they want that.
I wanted to add, we love these examples from aviation because I'm from the aviation. It is like if you train pilot to fly an aircraft sitting at a desk. You put them in a simulator. Your first day on your private pilot license, you sit in a small aircraft and you take off, and that's it. So I think it took some time for us to realize this in higher education. So thanks for sharing, Rob.
That does suggest as well virtual reality and augmented reality as a location for assessment.
Absolutely,
well.
That sounds like a fantastic topic for another podcast, which we will have to do with you guys.
I totally agree.
Just to wrap up this
one. The list
one.
Is becoming longer.
Yes, I know. We've got a little book of other topics. Fascinating. And I think that's very pertinent, for certainly for us at City, is this idea of assessment. I saw a photograph yesterday of a large event space all laid out with exam tables, and it was terrifying to see that. Just to finish off, just a quick one-liner from both of you about where you see the future going with your experience at TEALFEST over the last couple of years. Maybe Jess, if you go first.
Okay, so a key take home would be, I need to experiment, take more risks within my own practice. Involve students in that design process as well, and think about the bigger picture. And really, it goes beyond hybrid for me a bit. Like, it's about the authentic practice, the diversifying approaches, the providing new opportunities for learning, that it doesn't all take place in a lecture theatre in rows, and that for me it's about trying to share that and help people and since Tealfest that we still have a trickle of people coming to us saying how can we improve, how can we develop our hybrid experience, but the other big question for me is the technology. It's not there yet, and once that is more accessible and more available and more affordable, then I think that will be another game changer. But I definitely want to continue amid this. It's been interesting over the last 3 years, hybrids featured in every Tealfest we've run, starting with discussions around HyFlex, talking about to other institutions about their hybrid things that they were doing, and then reflecting on what we're doing and what student perspectives are. And the conversation's not really moving on in the speed I'd like. And so I think that there is more to be done. In my own individual practice, but also supporting the institution and also finding out what's going on further afield. So things like this podcast helps with that as well.
Thank you very much. Yeah, absolutely.
Robert, you get the final word.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you have the right kind of relationship with your students as designers, so you're a design collaboration with them, and if we can remove the barriers, the risk aversion that's created by admin bureaucracy, etc., plus more support, then anything's possible. And you know, telling people just do it. It's just getting, you know, that risk aversion is still a major problem in higher education.
Yeah, and we tell our students to come out of their comfort zone because they'll learn more. So maybe we all need to do that.
Anything's possible is a fantastic way to Absolutely. Wrap this particular episode up. Yeah. We would love you both to come back for more later on. It's been fascinating having this conversation with you both, and I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface yet. But for now, that leaves me to thank you both very much for joining us, even at short notice.
Mm. No, thank you for having us.
Yeah, very interesting. Thanks.
And thank you for listening to Teaching Here and There.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Teaching Here and There is a podcast brought to you by PSR Production. It's available to listen to on Apple Podcasts, Anchor FM, Spotify, and any web browser.